Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
And I'm Matt.
It's our podcast about anything and everything off-road. As always, we're socially distanced. Literally the only way we can make the show. I'm in the Midwest. Ross is in the Northeast. And Matt's in the Northwest. Like, we're going all the way across tonight.
Yep.
Yeah. Seattle. Born and raised.
That's fantastic.
We got our full country spread again.
Yeah. Back to our regular time zones of East, yep. Central, and actually, when this will this will come out a couple weeks after I did a show
and
like
this
live.
This is crazy. I'm sorry. This is gonna.
That's okay. We're okay with it.
You can pet her. You can like. We're not worried about the visuals so much. You're good.
She's.
<He's> affectionate.
Yeah. She said, "You saved me. I'm going to care about you now." So.
Yep. Okay.
Ross, I'm going to give you a sweet transition. Would she like to sit underneath your new awning?
Ah, yes, I'm sure she would. That was a great transition. Yeah. My only quick update this week is I met up with and bought an awning, bought an Overland Pros 270. It's a, you know, roof rack mounted awning with poles. And now I just have to figure out how to shit rig it to the top of my truck.
Nice.
And, zip ties? I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. So yeah. The funny thing is I was on Facebook after I had, you know, struck the deal to go pick this up on Sunday, and I was trying to find crossbars for the Lexus, and I found a dude who was selling crossbars, and I sent him a message, and we were going back and forth, and I said, "Oh, so what year truck did these come off?" And he said, '05. So I said, "That's not going to work. Sorry." And
I'm sorry.
And
I know, I'm sorry, guys. I really know. This was not planned.
No, you're good. I'm more laughing at the 05.
Oh, yeah.
That's
wrong GX. Yeah. So he says, but if you're, you know, just to let you know, I'm also selling an awning. It's like, well, the funny story is I was actually planning to go to Jersey to buy an awning. So I texted my brother and asked my brother if he had any interest. So my brother and I drove down to Jersey on Sunday and we picked up two awnings.
Nice.
Yeah. So he's going to put his on his 4Runner and, yeah, his is a fox wing, I think.
Okay.
It's like a bat wing,
but not.
Yeah, I think they're all like call them all like a bat wing.
Star Trek, Star No, which
yeah.
one is it?
That would be Star
it
Wars.
It would be Star Wars.
I like the Star Trek joke.
Nerd jokes, bad plays on words. That's all I got. Yep.
So that's all I got, Chris.
Completely what we're used to.
Yeah, I have nothing else interesting.
My only update, and I don't think we've talked about it on the show, I don't think we've even hinted at this, is I bought a Lexus LX 470, not a GX. I was GX shopping.
Yes.
And we were contemplating getting my wife a new vehicle because she has a 2008 Sequoia that I just added a lot of marks to, but that we'll have talked about that previously.
Yeah.
We haven't recorded
Everybody
it yet, but it
know.
Will come out before this.
Yep.
Yeah. So we found this one locally. 200,000 miles on it. Timing belt and water pump has just been done in the last like 800 to 1,000 miles.
Nice.
KMC wheels, a little bit oversized. Toyo Open Country AT3s, a tire we are very familiar with and comfortable using. Yep. I just brutalized the state of Utah with my set on the Sequoia. It's got a 2-inch Ironman lift underneath it. The AHC has been disconnected, so I don't have to worry about that failure.
Nice. Ooh, good call.
It still has the stock radio.
Running board delete.
Running board delete, and I'll eventually will add sliders. Yeah, it needs some sliders there, and obviously it has the Victory roof rack already. And then the grill's been blacked out, and the rear badge has been blacked out as well. All things said, it is in great shape for the cost we got it at. Was just... It almost feels like a steal.
It looks clean.
But it's got some little finicky things, like some interior trim pieces. One of the license plate lights isn't staying in the housing, but like small things that can be adjusted over time. My wife has chosen not to daily it. She's actually going to let this be our 14-year-old's first vehicle when he starts getting his restricted license later this summer. We're going to start driving to school and work on his own. So,
That's
I like
the truck to start with.
Yeah, I was like, it's way better than what.
Start.
Yeah, I did not have anything nearly that cool. So, and hopefully, I will keep using the Sequoia to do off-roady things since it's the one that's already armored up. So, but it's all-wheel drive. I love it. It just is great. So
cool.
We hadn't talked about it on the show yet, so that's my little update. And now we can talk about Matt.
Yeah, let's do it.
My favorite
race cars.
Yeah. So Matt, why don't you give us your little elevator pitch? Tell us who you are. Tell the audience who you are. How you got to where you are in the auto and whatever point of the industry that you've got your fingers in these days.
Sorry, this is just I can't. This is the elephant in the room or the hippo in the room. I don't know. From Seattle originally. I've lived all over the world, traveled extensively, but cars have always been the focal point. It's one of those, you know, did people choose to be gay? No. Did they choose to be car people? No.
No.
Also but it, no.
Absolutely. Completely. I got two for two on that one. So, yeah, I don't know. Cars have always been a huge passion. It's what I wake up thinking about. It's what I go to sleep thinking about. And I've been lucky enough to navigate a career that has kept me in the automotive sphere. And that a lot of people say, you know, well, if you have a hobby that you can make money at, it's never a job or that.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But it also cuts the other way too, where does that diminish your enthusiasm for the hobby if that is your job?
Right.
And in my case, not at all. It's what I love doing. It's what I love talking about. It's what I love, being a proselytizer,
yeah,
on-road, off-road race cars, off-road race cars. It's just, I don't know. I don't know how else I would be. I don't know how else to be me.
Where'd you start in the car world?
Interesting story. I'll make it brief, hopefully. Not one of my strong suits. But no, it was just days after 9/11, actually. I had graduated high school, and I wanted to go sell cars. I actually had a full scholarship from the Air Force for college. I had an Air Force Academy appointment, and I just, for a variety of reasons, decided I wanted to, you know, over that summer, wanted to go sell cars. And days after 9/11, there was this, pro-America thing, and one of the guys in the area had an American flag on the tip of an antenna from a Chevy, which I identified. I'm like, hey, so what's the story? And he's like, oh, I work at the Chevy store. I'm like, oh, can you get me a job? And that was it.
It's crazy.
So I started selling cars, and I don't know. I like people. I like talking to people. I like getting to know people. And I've been accused of being, you know, a consummate salesman or something, but to me, it's genuine. I really truly, truly enjoy talking to people. And so it makes it an easy, career to be in.
So you eventually ended up at a couple of the old magazines that the more hardcore guys kind of chased after, Crawl and Jeep Freak. So how'd you end up there? And well, first, how'd you end up there? What was that like? And I mean, you got any like favorite stories right off the bat from those days?
I got a couple good ones. I'll try and be brief. So I was an English major, and I've always enjoyed photography and telling stories. And so back when forums were, you know, how you communicated with fellow enthusiasts, that was where you met. And so I started doing these trip reports. We'd go off-roading, we'd go to EJS, we'd go to Moab, we'd do snow wheeling, we'd go to, you know, wherever. And I started writing these up, and it became more and more lengthy and more professional. And I got contacted by Frank Ledwell at Jeep Freak, said, do you want to be an actual contributor? Or it was like, can we just use this? I'm like, sure, fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that evolved. And it was, I think, 2007. I was at Easter Jeep Safari with Jeep Freak. And that was an online publication at the time. So Yep, still is. Obviously, the goal of anybody who is a burgeoning journalist is to see their name in print,
right,
on paper, in an actual magazine, right? And this is back when magazines still existed. And so we were at EJS, and everybody had gone home from the bar. God, what's that bar in Moab called? Woody's. Woody's Tavern.
I said there's not a lot, so.
Woody's Tavern. And back then, you had to have a membership.
Okay.
Utah law is if they were serving hard alcohol, you actually had to have an actual membership. And so you had to buy a card. No, it was, I mean, whatever. It's what it is.
It's hysterical.
Well, because it's so, Utah. Like,
right.
Because Utah, right?
Oh, here's your 3.5% beer. I don't know why they're from Minnesota, but.
And you can't have doubles. You have to have a separate whatever. So I was, there it is, Woody's Tavern. World famous. So I was in there. All my buddies went home. I was going to have one last round. I was going to walk back to our condo. And I see this group of people at the bar wearing jackets, these like sort of cheese ball jackets, but they all said Chrysler Motor Company or Jeep on them. And so I walked up. I'm like, are you guys with Chrysler by any chance? Are you guys with Jeep? And they're like, yeah. Who are you? What do you do? I'm like, oh, well, I'm Matt with Jeep Freak Magazine, you know, kind of this and that, so forth. I'm like, what are you doing tomorrow morning at 7? Like, I was hoping to sleep in, but what do you got? It was the Mopar Underground Chrysler, release of all the prototypes.
Wow.
And that was the very first time they showed the JT, which was the concept that eventually turned into what we know as the Gladiator today.
Yep.
And I was one of the first people on the planet to drive it and shoot it. And I came back to the condo and I'm like, oh man, you wouldn't believe what just happened. And the guys from Crawl Magazine were like, can you like, you know, get us in? And I'm like, no, I can't, but I can write the article and you can make me a stringer.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is like 2007.
Yeah, I think so. 2008, maybe.
Okay. I don't know if it was this concept or night.
That's the one. That's it right there. Yep.
Remember that.
I pictured me driving that rig.
It'd be a great rig.
Seriously. How many people have built trucks like that since?
Well, I mean, you know, of course, the Brute AEV
that was the JK8 kit that Mopar did.
Which I compared to the AEV, it was a.
Well, the difference is that AEV's building the Brutes, and people who have probably never put one together on the JK8 are putting them together for the first time.
But yeah, anyway, so that's how I got my first big break.
Okay.
Was sticking around after for a free beer from the guys from Mopar Underground, Mark Allen. And then from there, it was the next month. It's like, oh, do you want to do some more articles? And then it was eventually I was a senior editor for Crawl. Mm-hmm. And it was a really cool thing to do.
Were you already deep into the off-roading world at that point? Or was this kind of just like a trajectory you took because you saw an opportunity?
It was somewhat accidental. When we first started, I've always been a car person, an automotive person. An autophile or whatever you can call it. And I started with sporty cars and go fast stuff. Mm. And, you know, I had enough tickets that it was time to not have super fast cars. I was literally at the dealership I was working at and I was in my S54M Roadster and it started snowing and I couldn't get out of my parking spot. Like I literally like put it in reverse and the tires just spun. And earlier that day I had taken in trade a 1994 white two-door Jeep Cherokee. And I'm like, oh shit, I'll just take this home tonight and, you know, just get just able to get home. And I fell in love with it. Like it was nimble. It was light. It was 5-speed manual, 4-liter two-door. It was a delight. It was a super fun car to drive.
Yeah.
And so then I started Googling, like, what can you do to a Jeep Cherokee? And, oh, my gosh, you can actually take them off-road. And so I became an off-road guy. And so I bounced back and forth between road racing, sporty car stuff, and off-road. And I've decided that both are fun enough that I don't need to choose one.
Yeah, that's, I'm just sharing your whole Instagram profile because it's fantastic, because it's literally like off-road stuff mixed with sporty cars. Yeah. Like all over the place.
Yep.
Like this image by itself, perfect.
Yeah.
Right. That's my two-car solution currently. The red car is a S50 M3 swapped E30, and then my LC100, obviously it's, you know, fairly barely built.
Really, really big fan of those. I think I might buy one.
You should. I'd recommend a white one, maybe a Lexus. If I had my brothers.
That's great.
I personally do enjoy the Lexus front end better, but that's just me.
I never did.
Same.
Until lately, and now I'm like,
The thing
and
is,
I had a GX470 before, and
okay.
I liked that a lot. But I'm sorry, Ross, but the Land Cruiser is so much better. It's just
what is
the Cruiser is.
I
like it so much more.
You don't have to apologize. I know.
Is that the GX?
That's the Jeeks. Yeah, we called it a Jeeks because I've always been a Jeep person. Historically, I'm known for being a Jeep guy, but so yeah, that was the Jeeks. That's what it became known as.
Kind of like that.
How does taking a two-door XJ home eventually find its way into building a full-on Lemons race car out of an XJ? To clarify for anybody who's actually, you know, questioning things here.
Well, so the thing about the XJ, in its stock form, weighs 2,900 pounds. It's a unibody. It's rear-wheel drive. You can buy them stock as two-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fairly reasonable formula for a decent, inexpensive, dead nuts reliable car. And so for an endurance racing series that has a $500 budget cap, that sounds like a perfect recipe. And that so I went and found a $200 one.
Oh, the good old days.
Right? Jeez. Put a paint job on it and a roll cage and wheels and tires. And remarkably good.
That's crazy. I mean, the pictures of those things that you've done on the track, it looks so silly, but...
It looks amazing. What are you talking about? There's nothing silly about that. It's
coming
amazing.
Onto the front straight at Laguna Seca, crossed up sideways in the rain.
Yeah.
Liter LS and a 256.
Jesus.
It evolved quite a bit from the $200 drag out of the weeds into what it has evolved into. And you know, the wing is ridiculous. You know, it's obviously, but that's a play on words with petty cash. You know, like not much money. Richard Petty, Ricky Superbird, you know, kind of thing.
I love all of this. This is fantastic.
It's great.
It's been a huge chunk of my life my first race was 2009.
Oh, wow.
Same car. It's wild. A lot. Yeah.
Is there, I don't think there's anybody else doing that with XJs. So, not on the tarmac.
I made the recipe, and there's 8 or 9 of them.
Really?
That have used my setup. And the thing about the two-wheel drive XJ is it's a solid front axle with no guts. It's just a tube.
Just open, yeah.
And so what we've figured out was adding some camber. So we would do offset ball joints, and then ultimately we would notch the tube like a little pie cut, bend it, and then re-weld it so that you had some fixed camber, because otherwise you just scrape the outside of the tires off on the road tracks. But
I guess what are the other teams, what are they generally running for rear axle and diffs, and what's in the LS powered one?
We run a 488, which I've had huge luck with over the years. Yeah, so a 31 spline 96 Explorer axle, which comes with disc brakes, which is another, you know,
upgrade. Yeah.
Bonus. And you can get anywhere between 307s to 410 gears stock. And they're strong as all get out, and they have limited slips.
Right.
It's like just Perfect
Yeah.
addition. And so the Cherokees obviously are sprung over, meaning the axle tube is below the leaf pack. And so what we did is we converted them to spring under, which is both
Interesting.
to lower it and also to control axle wrap.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then we
Is
just,
there?
sorry, go.
No, I was just gonna ask if there's any, aside from the cage, any other body bracing that you did to make them, you know, it's a unibody, it's not gonna flop that much, but
Yeah, I mean,
time
it's a,
does time, you
you
know.
know, a 8-12 point cage or something. You know, it's significant. And sadly, so this is very, very, very early days. That's before we did the wide body
Yeah.
version. So that was a stock 4-liter automatic when we first got it. And we've gradually adapted it to have a full manual controls because it's an electronically controlled transmission. So basically a full manual valve body, but using solenoids. So we were able to completely control when the car shifted. And it was also really, it's one of those things people are like, oh, an automatic race car. Yeah, but when you're paying more attention to your braking points and your apex, you're faster than you would be trying to, you know, heel toe, double clutch, rev match, and then you slide off into the weeds. It's
Unless if you have a lot of other track experience in a car with a stick.
and if you're sharing a car with four drivers, which is the formula, and you're relying on people you may not have raced with before. I mean, Jim Hall, Chaparral, right? Those cars were all automatics. It's I'm not the only idiot who's done this. I mean, there's two of us that I've now.
That's what race cars are now, you know? So.
So yeah, that's Laguna Seca coming across the finish with an E30. Do you guys know
Okay.
Bill Caswell?
Yes.
Yes, we're familiar with
That's
Bill. Yes. I don't know
that's
him, but I am familiar with
that's Bill was racing that car that weekend.
Well, Bill tends to like
And
E30s.
we're faster than that car. Dramatically
I'm
faster.
sure he loved that.
Bill's a good friend of mine. And yeah, the best thing about the Cherokee, and this is the best thing, is they're virtually indestructible. But at the end of the day, and people are, you know, in the paddock having a beer, there's no like, oh, what car were you driving? Oh, the white BMW. Oh, which
Right.
one? That one. I was like, oh yeah, well, the one with the sliver. Oh yeah. And it's like, hey, what car were you driving? The Jeep. Holy crap!
Yeah.
You know, it's. And that's actually Dave Cole from King of the Hammers getting strapped into that right now.
Oh, that's
Really?
awesome.
Yeah.
Do the are these intakes down here?
Brake duct.
Brake ducts.
Brake ducts. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you
So,
know, do you guys know Pirate 4x4?
oh, yeah.
So go back to that picture.
I also saw the NA. Actually, I played on the
Yeah.
when it was in its early days. Yes. The old forum days are,
So yeah, Naxxa, Team Naxxa. So the guy in the red there, that's Cam. The dude in the red fire suit, that's
Yeah.
Camo from Pirate 4x4.
Okay.
There's Lance Clifford, and then it was the two owners of Pirate 4x4. That's the other founder. And
Oh,
he
that's
came
so
out
funny.
with Dave and Dave's kid, Bailey, who's now killing it in racing Broncos, and all sorts of other fun stuff.
Okay,
Say,
so
didn't she
sorry, Mike.
just win at Hammers?
Say it.
I thought she just won at Hammers. Wasn't that this year?
So that's Bailey Campbell you're thinking of.
Campbell,
Bailey
okay.
Cole, that's Shannon Campbell's daughter. Bailey
Got it.
Cole is Dave Cole's son, which is an understandable. Yeah, I know. It's a
Right.
lot.
I'll keep up eventually. Too many Google
So
searches.
Sorry, go ahead, Ross.
I want to talk hammers.
Yeah,
We
so that was a good transition to that. Yeah.
just alluded to it very briefly. So you just got back. Were you part of a team that was competing, or were you there spectating and playing around?
This year, I had a wild hair and just went down to when I was a journalist. I went down to King of the Hammers when they released the new Wrangler MTR, the Kevlar. That was in, what, like 2009 or something to eight.
Yeah, a long
And
time ago now.
the release was in Palm Springs the week before KOH. And I asked
Oh, no.
the media rep, I'm like, do you guys mind if my free return ticket is a week later? And we don't care. So I went and did the MTR release in Johnson Valley, did all their, press stuff, and then stayed for a few days. Those are the tires. And I sort of just made my way out to Johnson Valley, and Dave Cole and Jeff Knoll, the two founders of KOH, I sort of wandered up with like a backpack, a camera, and nowhere to stay, no food, no nothing. And they're like, oh, hey, you, come here. And there was this scissor lift, and they were trying to hang the banners on the start finish arch.
Oh my God.
And it was like the what you'd have at a Costco, like, and this is off road. And so they had me up 30 feet, and they're like, hey, you, come here. I'm like, the it was utterly terrifying.
That's
So
hysterical.
I hung the banners, and then they connected me with some people, and I traded a handle of bourbon for a place to sleep for the week, and that was my first experience
Good
with
deal.
King of the Hammers. And then as Dave started growing the series, he called me and was like, I don't know how to I don't know how to organize a race. I don't know how to do timing and scoring. I don't know how to do all the official stuff. And you're a race car driver. I'm like, I have a two-wheel drive Jeep Cherokee. I had more experience. So they brought me on to do like timing and scoring and some of the officiating. I was eventually the chief tech inspector for the series. I helped write the rule book here and there. And that 12 years I've been doing that, a month at a time. So you show up and there's nothing there. It's a complete empty desert. And you're in an RV, and then you build the town. We have a survey crew. Everything is marked out, and you're literally like drawing out the map of Hammertown and marking course and everything. The infrastructure is, it's 100,000 people who show up to
With
this
into
event.
a place with population of zero the week before.
Right. It's imposing. So yeah, that's how I got involved in that. If you're catching a theme here, it's this accidentally stumbling into
So,
but yeah, anyway.
what's your involvement now?
So I am my good friend, and yeah, that's Hammertown. That is
That's
completely
cool.
empty before
Fucking
we get
crazy.
there, and it's completely empty after we get there, or
It
after we
is
leave, rather.
literally like from an aerial perspective, it is Burning Man for off-roaders.
Where Halloween meets gasoline, and yeah, it's the Burning Man reference is a really apropos, I think, in a lot of ways. Very different
Just
demographic.
a little.
Also, this and that's not even there are, but it does run the gamut. There are so many different people from so many different places, I think, for both events. Which is the cool part. You get to meet people you would never expect to, and that's a cool thing.
The night photos out there always get me of just like how absolutely colorful and wild they
Oh,
look. Like,
man.
yeah, it's well, speaking of Burning Man, actually, a buddy of mine named Ian has this rig called Big Willie, and it's a 1.5 scale Willis MB, like early Jeep. But it's based on Rockwell axles, and it's this giant thing.
God.
And he takes it out there, and it, shoots flames out of the. It was built for Burning Man, but it's also a functional, Rockwell axle, dual lockers, 47, 52-inch tall tires, something like that.
Jesus.
And so he does both of those events, and that's so there is some crossover.
Oh,
The
that's
Venn diagram
amazing.
does have an overlap, and that's. It's pretty cool.
That's so good. Chris, I hope you can find a picture of that thing. I'm kind of curious. I'm dying to see that.
Yeah. Big
Well,
Willie.
and
Is it the mutant Jeep that they're calling
it? Is it dark green and gigantic?
it? Yeah, the oh, come on, Google. Just want for I never want
Google, you have
small
one job.
images. Just give me the big images forever. Like, I don't want small
Set a
ones.
preference on that.
Looks like where we started.
So the one on the right is the one on the left is a real World War II vintage Willys MB. The one on the right is four-wheel steer,
That's huge.
Yeah, I mean it's ridiculous. But he takes that to Burning Man. He's a huge Burning Man advocate, but also an off-road guy. And again,
So
there's no reason you can't do both, right?
is
Like
every single body panel on that
pure
custom?
custom. Yeah.
Yeah, Jesus, crazy,
Yeah. Well,
crazy.
and like if you just see it without the other Jeep next to it just
It's
looks big, but
yeah.
like look how small the person is. The person is your
Oh my
now.
God,
Exactly. There you go.
yeah.
It's not a
That's
child. And the
like the Mega Raptor or something.
cool thing about KOH and for that matter, Burning Man is none of this makes sense. Why would
Yeah.
anybody do any of this? And it doesn't matter because it's just cool. And I don't know. I think car people in particular have to own up to that because none of this makes sense. It's just an
No.
extremely expensive way to light dollar bills on fire. But it's really fun. I mean, it doesn't have to make sense, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the trope about being a car enthusiast is like there's nothing in it that's not emotional, you know, because if there was no emotion involved, cars to everybody would just be like the point to point A to B kind of stuff.
Appliances.
They'd literally be appliances, but because we have emotions and we like experiencing things and seeing things and smelling things and, you know, climbing up or going over things that give us adrenaline, it's a yeah, a good way to set money on fire. At least it's
Well,
fun.
I alluded to it earlier, but the reason I off-roading became an attractive alternative to driving super fast and getting tickets was you get the same adrenaline rush at 2 miles an hour that you do at 122 miles an hour. And it's much safer, much in many, many,
Generally,
many ways,
generally.
and super less expensive with your traffic lawyers. I don't know. It's a different experience. And you also are out in nature and it's beautiful and you're in the mountains and you go camping with your buddies and your friends, and it's a lifestyle. I hate that term, but it is a thing, and it's addictive and it's great for the most part.
For the most part.
Well, not having to see Trump flags off the back of UTVs, that's not my particular brand of bourbon, but yeah,
No.
I have actually had a lot of people who have been welcoming to a broad variety of different lifestyles within the off-road world. And that's been an interesting dynamic, which I'm not trying to make this about that, but both in racing and especially off-road racing, being in the LGBT community, I mean, it's a different vibe than anything else.
Have you found it to be people are trying to think of how to phrase this? Are people just generally unaware of it or uneducated about it? And then like you have to break down that barrier, or is it just sheer ignorance and once they realize that, you know, opening and acceptance is the better way to live, you get past that?
Yeah, and it's again, this is not the focus of your podcast. I totally get it.
Hey, we're
But
happy to talk about this stuff. It's important stuff.
now I've had incredibly, to me, important interactions with people who had never met a gay person before in their life. And they certainly had, but they didn't know. And it was that guy who was on the float at a pride parade or something. Like it wasn't a real person. It was a facsimile. It was a comical impression of, and to be able to be an actual person who can turn a wrench, build a race car, it humanizes and makes people understand that it's not a pride float, right? My life is not a pride float. It is, I'm a real human being. I have a real big boy job. I have an adopted puppy who's snoring like a chainsaw now next to me.
And we can't hear it, which is great.
Yeah.
I don't have to edit that later.
Yep.
But I like race cars. I like action movies and guns. And I mean, it's not a binary one or the other kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of really important interactions, I feel like, with people who have called me or messaged me or emailed or whatever later saying, yeah, my little brother just told me he was gay and I would not have known how to handle it if I hadn't had some interactions with you. And
right.
Again, I'm not trying to like take credit for any of that stuff, but it's good to see people out of the cliche, you know, I'm not here to hear your fashion designer, personal shopper, whatever. It's good to see that both can exist.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Absolutely.
And it echoes that, Chris, I think we were talking about this on an episode we recorded recently, but everybody has a car experience, and cars, there's a through line that can kind of unify anybody who's had anything to do with them ever. And it, you know, it makes a big world smaller, you know, and whether it's stuff like this or
having a common passion, a common enthusiasm. Yeah. You know, it's all of a sudden it becomes less, the world becomes less awful when, you know, you're talking, all of a sudden you're talking to some random person and you're talking about, I just think it's like, all right. So if you're an airplane guy, like you walk into a bar and you're like, oh, you see guys doing the, I was right behind them, you know? And then there's the gun guys and they're like, oh yeah, I was right there. Yeah. And there's bike guys and they're like, oh yeah, I was right there. And the car guys, oh, I was right there. We're all the same people.
Yeah.
You know, and the hand, you can knitting people probably have the same, whatever, you know, it's
they're at different bars from us, but
yeah, I mean, exactly. It's like,
I was just gonna say they're all Italian because they're all talking with their hands, like
the pizza makers. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we're all just people and we all have passions, and I love cars, and that has been my, you know, driving passion. It's a terrible cliche, but yeah. Sorry. I was not even intentional. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. It's good.
But yeah, I don't know. Cars are my life. Right now, I am the sales director at we're a very, very niche, small Porsche shop in the Seattle area. Historically, we've been
gorgeous things.
Whoa. One owner, Irish Green 912.
Good God.
So
914s. I'm just gonna sit here and clip through pictures now because I'm infatuated. I'm in. This is what I want. I want a 356. Sorry.
Well, you certainly
I only have budget for a bug though. So
they're the same thing.
You've posted a lot of pictures of a lot of fast Porsches on your social media. So it's like you didn't want to stay in that world full time. So now it's just the job. And
I was never a Porsche guy until super recently. Super recently. But I mean, Porsche's fine, cool. Yeah. 911. Yeah. Yeah. Ass engine, Nazi wagon, blah, blah, blah. and I accidentally bought a Boxster about 6 years ago. It was too cheap to not buy.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself just falling in love with it. It was just so good. And this sounds like a thing rich people would say, like, well, until you have owned one, you really don't understand. You know,
yes.
You know, it's this
silver.
Sorry?
Is that it?
Well, that's one of them. But yeah, that's also one of mine. This is the launch color, silver over Boxster red leather, which is another one of my kinks. But
the color or the launch colors?
Red interior happens to be one of my things.
On the same page there, brother.
Red guts work on everything. Facebook page. That's mine.
Especially with a gray exterior. Like, I love that. Like,
the contrast is what I dig. For so many, for the last 15 years, it's been black with black interior, white with black interior, silver with black interior, gray. It's been so boring. And I think people are really embracing the variety of floor combinations. And I am all for it.
Pink Porsche.
The pink Porsche is the...
Which is currently the cover photo of my Facebook group.
Is it?
Nice.
Is it the color is frozen berry metallic, I believe?
Yeah,
that's the word. Speaking of Matt, I met him actually at a Lemons race when he was on the car show.
Oh my
Adam Carolla.
Yeah. And
disaster. Dan Neal from Wall Street
Dan
Journal.
Neal.
Yeah.
And oh God.
A basketball player, which I don't follow basketball.
John Sally.
John Sally. Yeah.
So okay.
Chris is a sports person.
John Sally, good job. I was contacted by the organizers of Lemons because I am a firearms enthusiast in a responsible, we need to, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
They asked me if I could bring some guns to the race because at this race in Reno, John Sally, Matt Farah, Carolla, we're going to do this episode. It was a full 24-hour race, 24 hours straight through. And they happened to have a shooting range at the track. And they thought, wouldn't it be hilarious if the – and here's where the what if the team drove a car and then it's, you know, we had to shoot it at the end. You know, this made up
challenge.
Yep.
Yeah, which was totally – and they wanted to shut the race down for half an hour midway through so that we could stage a thing. I mean, just like – reality TV like not overload good. But they did give us a budget for ammunition, and so I brought two AR-15s and an AK-47, and I sawed a Nissan Z32 Nissan 300ZX in half that they had been racing all weekend, and I was also the range master teaching Dan Neal, John Sally, and Matt Farad how to
Swear
to God, this is true. I can't make this shit up, you guys. I seriously, this is so absurd that it can't be imaginary.
That was something that only could have been done back then. Like, it wouldn't happen the same way today with the way Michelle was going to do it.
We put Tannerite and an acetylene bag in the car. So Tannerite is a binary explosive, and acetylene is an explosive. And we spent 8 minutes with them trying to hit the target.
The Tanner.
And nobody could. And so I finally grab a rifle and I'm just like, fine.
Yeah, fuck this.
Kaboom! And it was like, you know, they're this is what happened when Lemons, you know, 24 hours of Lemons blows your cars up. And, you know, it was total reality TV nonsense. But
yeah,
again, these are the behind the scenes things you.
Right.
Why am I not surprised that TV wanted to blow a car up? Like,
right.
Look, well, like, I've never shot a car before. I'd never shot a car before. And so I was like, ooh,
I can shoot a car.
Right. It's funny. In that picture that Chris just had up of you shooting with the Land Cruiser in the background in the snow, it kind of looks like you're shooting at the cruiser.
Targets are just to the right.
Are they?
It's 100-yard. It's 100-yard range. That was just our blocker. But no, I was not shooting my Land Cruiser.
I hope not. Sacrilege, yeah.
But it was, again, one of those. And we actually, oh my God.
See, Ross, they're over here. Targets are over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the screen.
If you're that far off.
There we go. Okay. Yeah.
So that race was a full 24, like I said, and the Reno Fernley Raceway, which is now no longer existing, is near the Mustang Ranch, which is a whorehouse,
right?
A legal brothel. And they put some of the gals up in the corner stations in the middle of the night when it was actually snowing. And also, it's a open range, literally like a were wild Mustangs, and I'm not talking about the cars, I'm talking about the horses. So in the driver's meeting, it's look out for must horsey horses. And also, so it was snowing. I was looking out for Mustang horses, and gals from the Mustang Ranch in the corner stations in a Jeep Cherokee after having shot a car into half. It was just, it's the most ridiculous thing. And it was literally snowing. We won that race. We won the grand prize. I did not have enough money to get home had we not won. So we were able to actually sleep in a hotel that night,
Ooh.
on the tow home. So I don't know, man. I'm not,
That's great.
I can't make shit up.
That's just utter madness.
So yeah, anyway, that's me in a nutshell.
That's fucking fun.
In
Chris, where do
a
you want to go from
nutshell.
there? I don't even know where to go from there.
I want to go back to the old Porsches. Can we do
Yeah, that probably
that?
would be more beneficial towards my, you know, future employment and stuff.
Yeah. So
I went on the show and I didn't plug the
yeah,
job.
the thing, yeah.
I'm
So
just talking about
basically,
old bullshit from 15 years ago.
any generation of Porsche shows up.
So we right now literally have anything from the very first. Oh my Jesus. Okay. Well, I guess we're doing this. I have driven the very first Porsche that ever won a race ever.
Okay.
Okay.
It's a Gamund Coupe that won Le Mans. It's the very, very, very first Porsche to ever enter and win a race. I was 14 and I had family friends who were involved in the Monterey Historics.
Okay.
And
I'll do it.
Chuck Forge owned this car and it had been converted to a convertible. It was bright red and had been campaigned for years and years and years that way. And then Rod Emery, who I also raced lemons with, I actually pushed his car across the finish line. Swear to God.
Oh
Swear to
man.
God. I, again, can't make this up. At ORP in 2013 or something like that. I didn't know it was the same car until not that long ago. And I'm like, oh my God, I've driven the very first Porsche to win a race. And it was because Sam Posey, who was working for Speed Vision back then, right, needed it moved so we could push El Caballo out of its pit space next to the other car. And so Chuck's like, hey, hop in and just pull it forward. I was 14. And
Little did you know.
little, I mean, I knew it was an interesting old, you know, bathtub Porsche, but that's the car, number 46.
That's
And
fucking
so Rob
crazy.
has since converted it back from a speedster, a convertible, to the coupe, which I'm conflicted about a little bit because that car has so much history. It raced in SECA from,
My God.
but as a convertible, it raced in the early days of SECA, back when California, you know, it's where guys would come from the war and they had a little bit of cash and it has so much provenance as a convertible to undo it. I get why. I mean, it's the most valuable Porsche in the world, theoretically, but it also breaks my heart a tiny. We lost all of that West Coast sports car early history. Again, I see both sides.
Yep.
But yeah, I've driven that car.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that it doesn't like you can only go down from there, which at 14 is like kind of, you
That's
know.
welcome to my life. Can
Yeah.
tall people fit in 356s?
They're built for German people, so they're not impossible.
Okay. I'm a little short of 6'4", so that's why
I got a car for you. Starts with
I would
B,
take the
rhymes with
I
the
would say
Beetle.
that back when it was the sawed-off roof one would probably be the
The better.
yeah. So anyway, my sorry. 356 is yes, we work on those, we sell those. My business partner is Dominic Dobson, who is
Okay.
a somewhat he's done some things in racing. I forget what they are, but
It has it on the website.
Start at Indy 500 and Le Mans and Craftsman Truck. And to me, the best part was racing a Dodge Stratus in the Speed Vision Cup. Like, that was the best racing. That was so cool. And I'm sad we don't have that kind of stuff anymore. Anyway, so Dominic is a longtime friend of mine, and he runs the service side of the business, and I run the sales side. And so we buy and sell and represent interesting and unique cars, electric cars.
Is he an older gentleman?
Oh, he's really old. Like,
I wasn't going to call him out for that. But. I
cannot wait to show him this. Yes, he's very, very old.
That's funny.
I turned 40 in like 2 weeks. So,
okay.
old jokes are a little on point, but yeah.
I completely understand.
But yeah, so Dominic is obviously a very accomplished race car driver. He's actually going back to the Le Mans Historics coming up soon, racing the car that he raced at Le Mans in 1912, I think what it was.
1912.
I think 92.
Okay.
It's a Porsche 962, maybe 94, something like that. But the bright red Fuji 962, which caught on fire dramatically during that event.
Rarely does catching on fire not happen dramatically.
That's a fair. That's a yep.
That's the one.
Jeez. Yeah, that's the one.
Is that picture taken at speed or is he stopped already?
I think that's him sliding off the side and then he hops out and it burns to the ground. But they built the car back, the same car, and he's going to go drive it again in a month and a half. So, yeah. So that next time I talk to you, I'll be the I'll be running the service and sales side.
That's not a morbid joke at all.
Yeah,
I mean, that's not in this line of work, you've got to have a dark sense of humor if you're going to strap into a race car. I will say one of the things about modern racing, or even Lemons, you know, wearing Hans devices, we've got, you know, head to toe fire safety gear, the helmets, the shoes, the gloves, the boots, everything it's, you can still hurt yourself for sure, but the adaptation of modern safety stuff has really taken a lot of the truly scary stuff away from racing, yeah. In my mind.
I mean, I'm sure everybody at this point has seen the Grosjean, his crash a couple of years ago, and they got his car on display right now. And like, safety trickles down, you know, and in amateur racing too. So,
I had the terrible turn of phrase of the romaine candle when I was watching that event happen live. It was super scary.
I was so hungover, and I was sitting there in bed, and my heart like stopped. It was like 30 seconds of.
I had to walk around. I was like, "Did I just watch that dude die like that?"
Have you seen Senna? Have you seen the?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
As a racer, as a person who not also just a racer, but also a guy who does the tech sheets and verifies that your gear is good, that your cage is good, that all this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I was the tech inspector at a race where someone died with the car I did the tech inspection for. It was.
That's heavy.
I can't describe. Luckily, I mean, not luckily, but he ended up he had a heart attack and he died before he hit the wall.
Right. It was unrelated to the safety.
And all the safety gear. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah.
All the safety gear worked. And he would have lived through it, but
had he not previously had a heart attack,
right.
Had he not died before he hit the wall. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that 12 hours between the what's that mortician? What's
the coroner?
Coroner. Thank you. Yeah. Ooh, wow. That was a night.
Yeah, I'm sure. Oh man.
There's no such thing as perfect. You can
Well,
Check
you just
every
you do the
single
best you can. You
thing.
try real hard, and you know. And I was a huge advocate for King of the Hammers of adopting some safety stuff from the road racing world, and nobody wanted it. I got so much pushback. I can't run around on the rocks in those fireproof boots. Okay, well, sure, but you have third-degree burns on your feet now.
Yeah, you're not running anymore
I'm
at
not
all.
Gonna,
yeah,
I'm
you can't
ever,
run if
yeah.
you don't have
I'm
feet
not going to
on
wear those
which to
gloves.
run.
I can't. Okay, well, Hans device, I can't see around. And all these things have become mandatory now in that period of time.
Yeah.
And it was such a push. It was incremental. You know, I was like, oh, I don't need that shit. We had a guy race once in a welding jacket.
What?
I mean, it's technically fireproof.
That's
just
the thing.
Not
it's
the
like,
rest of him. Like,
yeah.
It's like, that's not, I was like, I'm a firefighter. I got these boots here. I'm like, yeah, they're the, whatever.
It's fireproof, but it only goes down to like, whatever.
Yeah, it goes to my rib cage. Like,
right.
That's not
nothing
a fire
important
suit.
Below
that's
your
not
rib
a fire
cage.
suit. I mean, you're not, it's not gonna work.
Fun fact, your dick is not
Yeah.
fireproof.
I don't want to know how Ross knows that.
Yeah, that's a. We'll leave that one for the next episode.
Yeah, that's a different show. Yep.
Very different show.
Christ. I can't believe I said that out loud.
I know. I was like, and you left the door open to the next joke. Like, I just.
Seriously.
Anyway.
That was a softball underhanded, right?
Exactly. It was. He said it on the tee.
Oh,
man. Well, Ross, we've kind of gone through your deadline.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we've run right past my hard stop.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Yeah. No,
you're
great,
no,
man.
Dude, that's good. It's good.
The whole point of the show is to have long talks about stuff. So.
Yep. Yep.
Almost all of which is true. Almost.
Yeah.
All.
Almost all.
Dick part.
I don't know if your dick's flammable or not. I'm not sure if that's that could be true. Could be not true.
Yeah.
Use protection.
Yes, use protection. Fire safety. Fire safety.
Fire. Yeah,
all the way
fire,
around.
Fire suits. Oh man.
I'll wrap it up real fast. You can
wasn't
rate
expecting
review.
To go there.
Yeah, you can rate review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Some people might not be tuning in again after
yep.
this one.
We just scared the last of our listeners away.
The one. Do us a favor, like and subscribe on YouTube. Follow us on Spotify. Spotify actually tells us how many people follow. That's a very nice number to see and then talk to potential advertisers with. So you can follow Matt on Instagram at Pettycash Racing. Definitely find him on Facebook as well. I'm sure Gracie's going to have her own page eventually.
Oh, yeah.
You can follow Hooniverse, The Hooniverse on Twitter, The Real Hooniverse on Instagram. Is Twitter still a thing? I went 5 days without logging into my Twitter account while I was on that Utah trip, and I don't know that I ever need to get back into it.
Fucking
probably not, especially right now. And Ross
yeah,
is
especially right now.
Yeah, Ross is no not like the one from Friends on Instagram, and I'm at Overlanding Dad. And we did it. We did a show. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Hey, it worked.
Works. Yes.
Despite Gracie's best efforts in the beginning there.
Dude, she took a sweet nap.
Yeah, she's a sweet pup. And you know, I'm on the board of directors for a charity for homeless youth, and it was like saw this cute puppers, and I'm like, I can't be a hypocrite. Come on, she needs a home too. So
yeah,
she looks like she's taken pretty well to you after 2 days. You know, some dogs after 2 days would be a little skittish and whatnot.
She just definitely wants all the loves, all the attention.
Yep.
She loves a Land Cruiser.
See,
ooh, that's all
perfect dog.
All about it.